According to the newly released 2023 World Happiness Report, and yes, such a thing exists, Finland is currently the world's happiest nation. Australia comes in at a respectable 12th. But of the 137 countries surveyed, Lebanon was one of the least happy, outranking only Afghanistan. For anyone following events in Lebanon, that will come as no surprise. Since 2019, the country has suffered one crisis after another. The Beirut port blast, economic collapse, political failure, and of course, the pandemic. Rania Abuzaid is, she grew up in Australia hearing stories from her parents about a very different, almost magical Lebanon. She now lives in Beirut and has written a deeply moving article for the latest edition of National Geographic magazine titled Is Lebanon Broken? Rania, thanks for joining me. Before we get into your story, can you bring us up to speed with the breadth and depth of the economic crisis in Lebanon?
Well, as we speak, actually, this morning there is a demonstration at a square near Parliament in Beirut to protest the deteriorating living conditions. And security forces have fired tear gas in a failed attempt to disperse what is a very angry crowd. And there are similar gatherings in other parts of the country because fuel is now prohibitively expensive. And for many people living outside the capital, it simply costs too much to drive to Beirut. That's the extent of the economic pain. And if we want to talk about how it started, well, I guess one place to start is in October 2019 that you mentioned, because Lebanon has been on a rapidly downward decline ever since. So the Lebanese are now grappling with a crisis that the World Bank has classified as one of the world's worst since the mid-1800s. That's how deep it is. And it is the World Bank has also pointed the finger at the ruling class, saying that this is a deliberate depression.
Rania, the Lebanese pound has lost more than 98% of its value since the economy began unravelling in 2019. That is extraordinary.
It is so difficult for me to wrap my head around this figure, and I live here. Things are so, I mean, just yesterday, the pound hit another historic low. In October 2019, before the crisis happened, the pound was 1,500 pounds to the US dollar. Yesterday, it hit 140,000 pounds. Now, how this plays out is that people here earn their salaries in Lebanese pounds. If you were to consider, for example, a civil servant, somebody who was on a pretty good wage pre-crisis, that would have been about 4.5 million Lebanese pounds. Now, before 2019, that was the equivalent of about 3,000 US dollars. Today, that person's salary is about $40. There is triple-digit hyperinflation. Some supermarkets have stopped pricing goods because they can't keep up with the currency fluctuations. And the only thing, you know, so you go to the supermarket, you take something off the shelf, you don't know how much it's going to cost. The only thing you know is that it's going to be more expensive than the last time that you bought it.
Rania, I understand that people are robbing banks in an attempt to get their own money.
I don't think you can use the word robbing because they're trying to get their own money out. So what happened in October 2019, people from across the country took to the streets to protest against their very arrogant, very feckless ruling class that has mismanaged the country for decades. The banks closed, and when they opened, they had locked people out of their deposits. So we all sat there and watched our money melt, while the politically connected managed to ferry out billions of their dollars to offshore accounts. So since 2019, we can't access our own money.
I understand you've lost your entire life savings.
Yet me and everybody else who had any money in a Lebanese bank account who wasn't politically connected. I mean, imagine that the highest bill in circulation now is worth less than a dollar. And in 2019, that banknote was worth almost $67. So people, some desperate people, have stormed banks demanding their own money. So they're not actually stealing. They're not actually taking more than what they're owed.
Rania, you talk about the ruling classes being feckless. I think they could probably sue you for flattery. The International Monetary Fund did make certain demands and they have not been met at all, have they?
Well, no, because the ruling class has done nothing to put forward a credible path toward economic or financial recovery. They have taken no measures to in any way alleviate the people's suffering. And if anything, their short-sighted policies have actually exacerbated the people's suffering, and they forced the lion's share of the pain onto people, not, say, bank shareholders, for example. And that's primarily because this is a political financial cartel, basically, and you know, the concept of conflict of interest does not exist, so much so that many of the leading political figures either owned or were shareholders in or actually sat on the boards of leading banks. That is how incestuous these relationships are.
That's why feckless seems such a gentle word. And, of course, the presidency...
absolutely. And
the presidency's been vacant since, October 2022.
Yeah, there is a governance void which exacerbates things. The government is in a caretaker capacity at the moment, and the bickering, feuding politicians who are completely divorced from the people's pain can't agree on a replacement for a president. And the system is quite Byzantine here in the sense that the president, the prime minister, the cabinet all have to sign off on decisions. So the void is in some ways also a convenient excuse for these people not to do much. And as for the reforms that the international community, the IMF, the World Bank and others are calling for to unlock what are really desperately needed aid and relief funds, the fact is that this political class will not reform itself out of its own privileges. So there is no real effort to try and get the country out of this mess or empathy for, or God forbid, a sense of civic duty.
Rania, three quarters of Lebanon's population pushed deeper and deeper into poverty. You've mentioned fuel prices. What's it actually look like for the people?
So, you know, I mentioned the what's happened with the banks. So we're sitting there, we can't touch our money. If you're a civil servant, like I said, you know, the salaries have melted for everybody who earns in Lebanese pounds. Let's take the basics like electricity and water. Now, this country hasn't had 24-hour electricity for decades, but previous to prior to the crisis in 2019, the power cuts were regimented in the sense that you knew when to expect them. Beirut had 3-hour daily power cuts, so you would have a generator subscription which would fill in the gaps. Now, I mean, for years, state power hasn't come for more than an hour or two a day. And you don't know when it's coming. So you need to rely on these generators. The generators can't keep up. Like in my area in Beirut, in my neighborhood, the generators run for 13 non-consecutive hours. So for half the day, you don't have power. And that's if you can afford the generator subscription. Remember the civil servant who was earning the equivalent of $3,000, whose salary is now worth about $40. The most basic generator subscription for the smallest amount is $130. So the maths doesn't add up,
to say the least. Now, the Beirut port explosion in August 2020 was one of the largest non-nuclear explosions in history, but there doesn't seem to be much accountability for the tragedy.
There has been no accountability because this is a land of impunity. And the investigating judge who is trying to probe this port blast has been stymied by political interference. He has summoned top politicians and security officials. There was a devastating Human Rights Watch report that was an investigation into the blast that pointed the finger at senior political military security officials who knew about the presence of this ammonia ammonium nitrate for years. And this was stockpiled in a port warehouse within walking distance of residential neighborhoods, including my own neighborhood. And these people did nothing to remove the danger. So this judge, Tariq Bitar, has summoned some of these top politicians from a range of political parties for questioning. He's also issued an arrest warrant for some of them. And these are warrants that have not been executed. Instead, the politicians and the security people have refused to cooperate. And some of them have actually filed lawsuits against the judge to have him removed. And in the presence of those lawsuits, he has had to suspend his investigation into the port blast, which is why many of the families of the victims of the blast are calling for an international investigation, because they have absolutely no confidence in a local judicial system where judges are appointed by the same sectarian political leaders who have their finger in every pie in the country.
You talk about a particular song that became a sort of soundtrack of your childhood. Let's just listen to a bit of it and you can explain it to me. I recognize the voice of one of the most celebrated Arab singers of all time. But what are the lyrics saying?
Oh, you're going to make me cry. So this is a song that holds great sentimental value to me and to many Lebanese who grew up in the diaspora. My parents used to play it often during the civil war, lamenting a place that they couldn't return to. In the song in the section that you just played, Fairuz is, she feels the breeze on her face and she's talking to it, asking the wind to carry her back home before she grows so old in a foreign place that her country can't recognize her.
No wonder you're near tears. Now, the picture of the Lebanon you've painted is so different than the one you grew up imagining or hearing from your parents. How did they describe their homeland?
Well, I mean, you know, to be fair, my parents' rose-coloured glasses were pretty thick. But my dad left in the 60s initially to New Zealand. And he left because of some of the same isms that exist today, so sectarianism, political nepotism, classism. But the main difference between my parents' Lebanon and the Lebanon that I'm living in is that my parents' Lebanon was a state of institutions. This Lebanon is a state of entrenched, unaccountable sectarian leaders and their cronies, and that's a key difference.
You write that their idealism collided with the reality of a country where warlords took seats in parliament and granted themselves immunity for war crimes.
Yeah, and that's not when the problem started, because obviously the problems had precipitated the 15-year civil war prior to that. But the fact is that the unaccountability and impunity were baked into the post-war system when these warlords became leading political leaders. And these men or their political heirs have called the shots in the decades since the end of the war. They share power and also the spoils of power. They appoint judges and, as I said, they have business interests that really would be considered conflicts of interest anywhere else.
Knowing what you knew, nevertheless, you decide to move back yourself. Why?
The million-dollar question. I am very proud and privileged to belong to two places I call both Lebanon and Australia home. And I navigate between both of these places. But for the past couple of decades, I have been a Middle East-based correspondent covering this troubled region, as well as South Asia and North Africa and other places. And although I have lived in other places, I do keep coming back to Beirut. And as for why, I think I'll also quote my article. I spoke to a Mexican Lebanese who left in the 60s, and when I asked him that question, he said, well, I don't know, maybe you need a psychologist or something to sort that out. Maybe it's, you know, and then he said, our blood draws us back. And there is an element of that. There is an element of this feeling the need to be in a place that you know you have roots in.
And, quote, people cling to hope in a place that routinely breaks their heart. Is there any hope left?
Well, the hope is in people who refuse to give up. The hope is in some of the people who I talk about in the piece, who they themselves need help, but they are helping others in their community. The hope is in people who refuse to give up. So if they have refused to give up, then how can I? You know, that I think is ultimately where it's going to come from, because it's certainly not going to come from politicians who are quite comfortable with their privileges and who are in no rush to try and alleviate the people's pain.
So that eternal question, should I stay or should I go, is answered by so many by saying, I'm going. And, of course, that must lead to a huge brain drain that will have ongoing effects for decades.
Oh, for sure. I mean, every pillar of this state has collapsed. And one of the key pillars was, take, for example, the healthcare system. Lebanon's healthcare system was such that the country was known as the Hospital of the East. It was a destination for medical tourism. Many of those medical professionals have left simply because they can't make a living wage here. And the same thing with the education system. Lebanon's education system was, you know, second to none. Public school teachers have been on strike for months now because they can't earn enough to get to school to pay for the transport costs to get to school, let alone to put food on the table. So, of course, people are going to be looking for the exit, because how else can they, people want to live in dignity. They want to secure the basics. They want electricity and water and food. And they want to know that if they fall sick, that there's going to be medication for them and that they can afford to buy it. So these are the basics of life, and yet the basics are out of reach for many Lebanese.
You write beautifully, and I'm going to quote one of your sentences.
Thank you.
Most days I vacillate between exasperated love and simmering rage. Rania, thank you very much. I've been talking to Rania Abuzet.
Thank you.
Who's based in Beirut, and her piece in the latest edition of the National Geographic magazine, one of a vast number of mastheads she's written for, is called Is Lebanon Broken? And we encourage you to seek it out.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.